You're listening to KPCW's Local News Hour. The time is 8:19, and in the studio we have Park City School District Superintendent Amber Connolly, and she brought along with her Todd Hauber, who is the business administrator. We have a board meeting tomorrow, 4 o'clock, right?
We do.
Okay. And can you tell us, I understand the school bond is up on the agenda for tomorrow, big ticket item. What can you tell us about it?
Right. So in February, the governing board unanimously decided to go towards a 2017 bond. Right now, it looks like we have about 3 projects that the governing board is looking at solidifying. And those 3 projects are the expansion for the high school, a 5-6 school, and then future school locations, so property for those. So they also, with that decision, are asking the community how to finance. So are you know, the bond versus a tax levy. And so they have very specific language in there regarding, we have an urgent need for facilities, we're going to bond, we want the community to provide the decision whether we go to bond or do a tax levy.
So can you tell me, when are they going to announce the amount of the bond? Do we know that?
So by law, we have to have the amount by August. Mm-hmm. And so what that requires is that we have to have the projects and then the amounts, the basic amounts of those projects by August.
Okay. What can you tell us, Todd? You're the numbers guy.
It'll be a interesting conversation to decide what the best financing strategy is. So for the board meeting tomorrow, we've worked with G.K. Baum, who is the financial advisor for the school district, and they've put some scenarios together to look more specifically at what this bond proposition might look like given some of the general numbers that we have right now. So looking at a high school project that would be in the $65 million range, a middle school project that would be in the $30 million range, and monies for land acquisition in the $25 million range. So that's the model that we're putting forward right now. That's not necessarily the take-home idea because the board will have to refine each of those elements to make sure they have the right dollar amount. But we wanted to put at least the financing together to say, what would this look like? What would the timing of the payments be? What would the present value calculations be under a bond? And then there's also a scenario under the tax levy. What would that look like? What's the present value calculation on those as well? And so those are out there, and hopefully the public will have a chance to take a look at those before the meeting on Tuesday and really digest what's there and what the board will be talking about on Tuesday.
So if the bond fails, we'll go to a tax levy. How will that work?
So a tax levy works in the sense that during the June budget cycle for the school district, they would actually put that scenario together to say, what is the tax levy amount that would be needed for the cash flow of the project? So when do we need so many dollars? You know, do we need them this year? Or do we need them next year? When do we have to pay contractors and things like that? So there'll be in June, you could anticipate probably for the next several years, conversations of what's the next installment needed to pay contractors. And that would show up as a levy discussion of the board. And then they would go through a truth and taxation hearing with public input on what each of those dollar amounts are to cover the costs.
And so that is the following June.
Okay.
Yes.
And what is the impact to homeowners? What is that going to look like for them?
So when you look at the bond proposition, again, on the documents that G.K. Baum put together, you're looking at something that's around $205 a year for on a 20-year bond. The numbers coming through on the tax levy is looking more in the range of $1,500 for over 2 years, so a 2-year tax cycle.
We do have a calculator out on our website that you can look, put your assessed value in, and it will calculate what the projection is.
Okay. Let's move to the high school expansion.
You bet.
The expansion team reached the end of the public input process?
Right. So we had a comprehensive process that started about 9 months ago. Actually, it's 10 now. And we have presented 2 options to the governing board. They're known as 3A and 4A. People are starting to recognize those. 3A does not move Dozier Field, and 4A does. And so those are the two, I would say, the big difference. And so the governing board is now figuring out which option is the best and then putting the amounts to those. Both options range between $63 to $65 million And so they're within very close to one another.
So what kind of it said in the agenda that it's due to the growing population in Park City. What kind of growth are we looking at?
So one of the things I do want to clarify is we've had lots of questions is around what is so different around the amount for this expansion versus the last expansion. I just want to explain a little bit about that. During the last bond, we had a set amount, and so we built the expansion plans around a set amount. We used a completely different process this time, and it was what are the needs of our students and the programs to provide the best education for them. And so when we looked at that, we designed a plan that meets those needs. And so when you do that, then it did cost more. So the projections right now, we have built the expansion for a capacity of 2,000, and that looks like that will manage our enrollment for at least 10 years. I would say, however, we're already looking at long-term plans as far as where's our next high school site and when will it come online.
And what have you guys?
It would be at least 10 years out, and we have been in partnership with the city and with the county and also discussions with South Summit of what we can do to partner.
And do you guys have an idea of what area you're looking at?
Well, right now it's a matter of what land might be available in that timeline. So we're really looking at properties that are kind of on the perimeter of the district boundaries. So that's where a conversation with South Summit makes some more sense because right on our boundary, they're there. And they'll have student growth and experiencing that same kind of pressure that we're feeling as well. So those boundary areas are kind of where we're looking at this time.
Okay. So 5th and 6th grade school. What options is the board considering for them?
For the 5th, 6th school, we have properties both at Bear Hollow and the Ecker Hill. It started with, again, a process around what does the curriculum look like? And so the question has been around, you know, why isn't the site already, you know, decided upon? And it really began with what type of education do we want to provide our students for those middle level years. And so with that, we've looked at a problem-based type curriculum for our 5-6, and that team, the 5-6-7-8 team, would very much recommended that the schools are together. So we have the Ecker Hill property currently, we have the Bear Hollow property, and then of course we have our property along Kern's campus.
And could 5 and 6 go into Treasure? Is that an option?
Right now, the governing board has been very clear that Treasure Mountain would be just a temporary fix as we transition for grade realignment, if that would even come about. Right now, that's not an option.
Okay. Is it realistic to think the 5-6 students would be together by fall 2018, or is that just too big of a stretch?
When we look at decision making, one of the things that we do is we have to look at what are our needs pre-K through 12. And in speaking with the high school principal and administration and then, of course, the teachers, we have to look at our students' needs and minimizing transitions for all students. And the request has been, and it'll be my recommendation, that we wait until our facilities are finished before we do grade realignment. You know, the question, is it realistic? I would say, could we do it? We could. But what will that impact be on our children? And that's at the first and foremost of my recommendation to the school board.
Start times update. The transportation consultant hired in January is ready to give a thorough assessment of how busing would work with the new bell schedule. Will it be implemented in fall 2018?
Right. So a couple of things that are really important. We had a fantastic team that came together, presented to the governing board, and said later start times are needed for our adolescent students. And you look nationwide and now what the legislative session ended up adopting for Utah, saying that we needed to change start times to later for our adolescent students. When we hired our transportation consultant, a couple of things have come out. And one is that the way we have our bells set up, meaning we have three bells, that they need to be at least 50 minutes apart so we can, to the best of our ability deliver our students with accuracy. And so that came out loud and clear that that's something that we need to do. So in looking at that, if we were to change bell times, the earliest we could start our elementary is 7:50, 50 minutes later, 8:40 for our high school students, and then again, 9:30 for probably Ecker Hill. So when you look at that, we would have students getting out of school close to 4:30. And right now, that's something that we don't feel is educationally appropriate for them. So what we've come together and said, we are absolutely in favor of doing start times, but we're going to be asking the governing board to go to a two-bell schedule. And so what that would mean is additional buses and additional drivers. So it is not cost neutral. It does have an impact to the budget.
Okay. Impact to the budget, but what about impact to traffic? If we have later start times, especially during ski season, what will happen there?
We've been in direct partnership with the county and the city transportation director, and I'll let Todd give you the details with that. But right now, getting in between the 7:50, and I'm even going to say to about 9:10, trying to predict with accuracy if and when we could deliver our students has been a level that we can't say to our community, yes, we can. Do you have?
And so when the consultant presents to the board tomorrow, that'll be an aspect of the presentation that we've asked them to look into. So in putting scenarios together, both for three bell times and for the two bell times that the superintendent has spoken to, we've said, you got to be careful. You know, here's the peak time. So they've been in contact with Alfred, getting all the data that he's already run on Highway 248 and on 224, because the afternoons on 224 can be a great challenge in getting the kids home. The consultant looked at that and said, okay, you know, if we're going to shift this around, where can it fit? And so that we're not aggravating the traffic that's already there. We're in a pretty good situation right now in delivering students along Kearns Boulevard because we're ahead of the peak. And so any change would suggest that we're going to put ourselves into the peak. And so they're looking at ways to mitigate that.
And we've been working directly, of course, with the city staff and the priorities that the city has, which, of course, transportation is at the top of the list. We know that we have that we contribute to the traffic, but it's rather small comparative to the recreation traffic.
Sure. Okay, speaking about, not speaking about, but we're going to go to budget. And Todd, I guess you're going to handle this. Can you give us a preview of the extra funding needed to address mental wellness and support structures for children?
So at this point, I don't know that I know the full scope of the proposal that will come before the board. We're having those discussions now. There are a number of professional positions that we're looking at that we need to bring into the schools. But the price tag on that is, you know, it'll be a fair amount. I'll say that it's probably more than $2 million to look at the personnel that are needed to address both the mental health challenges that we have in our district as well as the academic expectations that we have within our community. So those are the dollars. The money coming from the legislature isn't going to be enough to cover something in that range. And so we'll have a real robust discussion with the board on how to get to where we need to be.
Okay. The board has asked us to put together a budget to be able to address all of the needs of the district. And so when we look at the foundation of our budget, we have a district learning plan that's very robust as far as an operational plan. And the two components that we're looking at building stronger is our intervention and enrichment and then building our socially responsible students. And so you might be asking, well what is that? That does get into the mental well-being of our students. So one thing is to ensure that our schools are meeting that both the national and the state recommendations for counseling. Right now, our elementary schools are higher than what even the state is. And so we will be asking for additional counselors. The other area is, if you recall, we had a special education review. And that was all brought upon hearing from the community, talking to our staff, saying that we needed to do a complete program review. And that was not built upon that we're out of compliance. It was built upon the idea that we have grown as a district. We're no longer a small district. We are really the size of a suburban-type district. We're actually larger than Murray down in the valley. So I think that that's something that the community needs to just be aware of. And so when we did that program review, there are staffing needs to become compliant as well as being able to meet the needs of our students. So that looks like some school psychologists, some additional school psychologists, behavior specialists, and of course, special education teachers.
Is there any progress with the community partners to open up quicker access to mental health professionals and treatment programs? Because I know it's been a criticism from the community that they may have a crisis with a student but can't get any help in any reasonable time frame. And will the mental health funding address this problem?
You know, schools have become the centers to address social needs, and that's just that's a natural phenomena that's occurred. We have some fantastic partnerships, of course, with Valley Behavioral Health, with the Peace House, that do counseling inside our school walls, and it's called site-based counseling. We also are working directly with Summit County. As you know, they are working on their strategic plan to deal with the mental wellness of all of our community. And one thing that's come out of that is being able to find treatment and have treatment centers for people that are going through the depression, that are addicted to some type of substance. So it's something that we as a community have to continue to work together. I do believe providing additional counselors at the elementary will help early on. We also are trying to provide, additional training for our general education teachers to help our students deal with things that happen in their life. So teaching them resilience, perseverance, those types of skills. One of the things that we've seen is that those students, that there's a trend in students, and you're going to see this also in higher education, is that is lacking, that ability to persevere.
Okay. Is there anything you'd like to add before we go to break?
I just want to encourage our community to stay involved and engaged. We're putting our 5-6 team together to start determining our site and then begin working on the facility. We'll be having our first meeting this Wednesday, 4 to 6 at district office.
Okay. Thank you so much for joining us. That was Superintendent Amber Connolly and Business Administrator Todd Hauber. When we come back, we'll get an update from Tom Kelly with the U.S. Ski and Snowboard Association. You're listening to KPCW's Local News Hour. It's 8:40, and in studio is Tom Kelly with the U.S. Ski and Snowboard Association with his weekly update. Good morning. How are you doing?
Great. It was great over in Aspen last week, and I trust it was the same here in Park City.
Well, I can't complain.
No, it's nice.
So tell me, World Cup Finals in Aspen. Leslie Thatcher is over there right now.
Yeah, we saw Leslie reporting over there and also getting in a little skiing. Skiing was fantastic over in Aspen, as I suspect it is here as well. We had temperatures up in the 60s, bluebird days. I think the only clouds I saw were a couple of little wisps yesterday, but it was absolutely ideal spring weather and a great atmosphere over in Aspen. This was an event that we'd worked together with Aspen for a number of years to bring. The objective was to follow up on the World Championships at Vail Beaver Creek from 2 years ago with another blockbuster event in America, all to help raise the awareness of alpine ski racing in this country. First time in 20 years, the finals had been held here. And just to clarify what the finals are, it's the last event of the season. There's no bonus in World Cup points, but only the top 25 skiers in the standings in each event are invited to participate. So it's a lot of racing, but it's quick racing. So instead of having 75, you've got 25 in the field. So there's a lot of action, but very much like the World Championships. We had 30,000 spectators over 5 days, so it was the largest turnout at any of our World Cups, and just beautiful conditions. And on the racing side, kicked it off with Lindsey Vonn getting on the podium again in the downhill. She was on the podium 4 times this year, 3 second-place finishes, and a win. That win coming in Garmisch-Partenkirchen earlier this season. And then moving on to the Michaela Schifrin show, she ended up finishing 2nd in the slalom, but won the slalom globe. She'd clinched that prior to coming to Aspen, and then actually had a kind of a long shot on the giant slalom globe, but that did not materialize. But she did clinch the overall title, becoming the 5th American to win that large crystal globe. And just a fantastic season for her with 11 World Cup wins in 1 year.
So then you also have free skiing world championships in Sierra Nevada.
Yeah, another springtime extravaganza. That one's been going on for 2 weeks now. Last week, we talked about the moguls and aerials and snowboard cross and other events that continue this week. The big events this past weekend were in free skiing USA with a very, very strong performance. First of all, Saturday night under the lights in Sierra Nevada in southern Spain, it was Aaron Blunk from Crested Butte picking up the win, taking the gold medal. And then in the slopestyle event on Sunday, an event that was postponed for a few days because of weather conditions, it was Park City's own McCray Williams taking the gold, and Gus Kenworthy, the Olympic silver medalist, picking up silver there as well. Very strong performance for them. Great event, and this event comes to Utah now in 2 years. Yesterday, the official handoff from the organizers at Sierra Nevada to the Utah organizers. So coming up midwinter in 2019, 2 years from now, we will see all of the world's best freestyle, free skiing, and snowboarding athletes coming right here to town.
So cross-country World Cup finals in Quebec City.
Yeah, again, another season-ending event up in Quebec. This event had originally been scheduled for Russia. And with the doping scandal coming out of Sochi, the International Ski Federation made a decision in January of this year to move it from its originally scheduled location in Russia to Quebec. Quebec won over bids from three or four other nations. And for us, it's really good to, it's not in our country, but it's pretty close. And we get expanded quotas. So we're able to start more athletes in every race than we normally would. So it's an amazing training ground of sorts for up-and-coming athletes. And we did that with, I think we had over 20 athletes participating in the 3 days of racing up there. On the results side, for the women, Sadie Bjornsson finishing 10th overall in the three-day tour. Jesse Diggins 16th. Diggins also finished 6th in the season-long standings. Very, very strong finish for an American. It's the best in 4 years. 4 years ago, Keegan Randall had finished as high as 3rd in the overall standings, but a great performance by Jesse, a career best for her. She was also 7th in the distance racing standings and 10th in the sprint. So springboarding into next year in Pyeongchang, we've got a lot of opportunities on the cross-country side.
So coming up in 2 weeks, you have USSA Super Tour and Long Distance U.S. Championship in Fairbanks.
Yeah, we've got a lot of U.S. championships coming up now. The World Cup seasons are over for the most part, just one jumping event left in 2 weeks. So a lot of U.S. championships coming up. Actually, the NASTAR National Championships in Steamboat this week. I'm heading over to there on Wednesday. We also have Alpine Championships in Sugarloaf. We have Freestyle Moguls in Steamboat coming up, and also the USSA Super Tour and Long Distance U.S. Cross Country Championships. The remainder of those were held right here in Soldier Hollow. And then that event's coming up in about 2 weeks in Fairbanks, Alaska.
Ski jumping, you have Ski Flying World Cup in Norway coming up.
Yeah, this was an amazing event this past weekend. And here I want to highlight a young man by the name of Kevin Bickner, 20 years old, grew up in Chicago, and he comes out of the really remarkable Norgi Ski Club up in the northwestern suburbs of Chicago. It has become, it's a long-standing club that goes back really a century or more, but in the last decade or so, it's become one of the most prolific producers of talent in terms of ski jumping, and right now we have three or four jumpers out of the Norgi Club on the World Cup Tour. Kevin being the foremost among them right now. He trains now primarily in Park City. His family actually has a place here, so you'll see him around town and out at the Utah Olympic Park. But Vickerson, Norway, has what's called a ski flying hill. And these are bigger than most other hills. So the hill size on this jump is 225 meters. That's about 100 meters bigger than the large hill out at the Utah Olympic Park. So you can just imagine the size of this thing. He had a really good result there a year ago in February. So 13 months later, he came back really excited to get on that hill and see what more he could do. And boy, he just produced the most amazing jump yesterday. On his first of two competition jumps, he went 244.5 meters. So if you want to do the math, folks, that's 267 yards. Almost the length of three football fields. And if you watch the video of this jump, he is in the air for about 9 seconds, and he just keeps going and going. It was the longest jump of the first round. It was the second longest jump of the day, and he had the longest distance points of any competitor. Ended up finishing 15th. He fell on his second jump, but and also was pushing out towards the distance record that had been set a day earlier on that jump by Stefan Kraft of Austria. So kudos to him, really a rising star on the U.S. Ski jumping team. And he'll be back in Park City in about a month or so. And if you see him on the street, give him a high five for what he did in Vickersund yesterday.
That's quite a record jump.
It's pretty amazing. And go onto YouTube and Google Kevin Bickner Vickerson and watch this jump. I shouldn't say Google it. Search it on YouTube. And he's got one more chance in 2 weeks there in Planica, Slovenia. Another similar jump. In fact, that's where the last U.S. record was set by Alan Alburn of Park City. Originally from Anchorage, he went 214.5 meters. So Kevin beat that record by about 30 meters.
Well, the World Cup on Ski Flying Hill is going to be taking place in Slovenia.
Yeah, and that's where he's got another great chance. These ski flying hills are pretty interesting. The jumpers really love them. They're not used in day-to-day competition. It's not an Olympic event per se. It's just a bigger jump. So they're able to fly a lot further. So if you're on the jump out here, you know, if you watch the jumpers, they're probably in the air for, you know, 4 seconds, maybe 5 seconds. Here, they're in the air for 8, 9, maybe 10 seconds. And they really, truly are flying. You look at it in slow motion, and just little movements of their hands and fingers really dictate how they fly through the air. And it's an amazing experience if you're a ski jumper.
Okay, is there anything you'd like to add before we go to a break?
No, we're looking good. It's been a great season. Thanks, everybody, for following. And we don't have a lot happening this week, so I'll probably be back with a wrap-up report in a few weeks.
Great. We'll look forward to it.
Great.
That was Tom Kelly with the U.S. Ski and Snowboard Association. When we come back, we'll talk to Basin Rec District Director Brian Hatton and Trails and Open Space Manager Bob Radke. We'll be back after this. KPCW News Time is 8:50, and in studio with us is Basin Recreation District Director Brian Hatton and Trails and Open Space Manager Bob Radke. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So let's talk about trails real quick. I know that with the rapid change in weather, trails are getting kind of tricky. What do we need to know?
Well, it's a season of change. We're going from nice snowpack to mud to snowpack to some dry trails, so it's just... we just hope people plan to turn around when they hit wet ground out there. And, you know, if they were looking to get out on their mountain bikes and everything, it's a little deceiving. You know, there's a lot of brown and dirt showing out there, but there's not much that's very dry right now. So it's limited. So plan accordingly. Go to Salt Lake City. I hear there's a bit of dry trails down there. So.
Okay. You know, when I saw the mud season, I was thinking about those mud races they ever have. Why don't we ever take advantage of those with the abundance of mud that we get?
Those are some pretty big events. We definitely let Soldier Hollow deal with those and try to keep our trails a little bit in different conditions, I guess.
So what can you tell us about the Toll Canyon Trails connection?
Yeah, so... this is a trail connection that we've been looking at for a number of years to connect the trails in Summit Park into Toll Canyon. And then eventually when we get a trailhead, we'll continue on from there. For this year, we are looking at trying to build a trail from, you know, the Road to Waz in Summit Park down to Toll Canyon to make a kind of a multi-use connection for the neighborhoods down there and kind of continue that trail system. Last summer, we did a lot of work with the environmental consultant and looking at the area to see where it's kind of ecologically more viable to put a trail in that area and looking at the impacts that it might have and all that. And so we've put that out for public comment. You know, we got a trail alignment kind of figured out a little bit what we'd like to do, and about a month ago or something, we put that out for public comment, and that comment period ended on the 10th, yeah. And we've been kind of putting together our response to that, and we'll have that posted on our website, you know, all the comments we collected, and we'll kind of write our statement out for that, and then I think we're going to go out to another round of public comment once we do that. So we'll probably give the public another week or two. We haven't really decided to comment on that statement itself. And then we'll at some point make a decision on what we're going to do and, you know, how we change it, you know, change our alignment or what we're going to do, depending on the comments we get and everything.
Okay. Well, I know that you're looking for some seasonal trail workers. How many are you looking for? What qualifications do they need, and why are we looking for them?
Yeah, I think we have looking to hire about six people to help us with our trails this summer. We, you know, people with some skill, you know, some tools, outdoor skill is great, but you don't really need it if you want to learn and work hard and be outside all summer. That's great qualifications to have. And, you know, we just try to keep our trails in really good shape, and there's a lot of work to do. So Basin Rec manages about 145 miles of the trail system in Park City, which is approaching about 400 miles, pretty close. And so we're, we just try to keep ours in good shape and stay on top of everything.
So what about East Canyon Creek Trailhead? What's new there?
Yes, we just getting underway with a contractor to build a restroom building there. So we've had a porta potty there for a number of years. It's kind of a gravel parking lot behind Jeremy Ranch Elementary School. And we're going to put a restroom there, hoping that we can get more people to use that trailhead.
Kind of spread out the use of all of our trailheads right now. They're kind of concentrated in certain ones. So hopefully they find this one and we'll spread out that usage a little bit more.
And it services the trails in the Glen Wild area, Flying Dog trails, and the trails in Bob's Basin and stuff. So I think it'll be a good addition.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What is this trail etiquette reminder that you're wanting to give our listeners?
Well, this one is a lot to deal with the mud season, as Bob talked about. What was it? When wet, turn around?
When wet ground, turn around.
There we go.
Just good trail etiquette. You know, use the trails when they're dry. You know, give them a chance to dry up. The mud, using the trail in the mud really does, you know, that kind of use accumulates and it's long-term and not repairable damage. And so, you know, we just ask that people, you know, have a little bit of patience and let the trails dry out before we use them.
So I know you have a new pool, and you're also looking for aquatic coordinator. What qualifications are you looking for, and what updates do you have for us on the pool?
For that position itself, we're looking for somebody with some pool experience, some programming. They will also do some sport programming or camp programming at the field house. What we look for, just staff all around, is just people that are willing to learn, have a good attitude, and want to help the community in providing fun activities to do. I mean, it's a pretty fortunate place that we work, so providing fun and creating smiles is a pretty good thing to do. So that's probably our biggest thing that we're looking for in that position. The project, we should be done the end or beginning of May, so we'll have that pool open and ready, and the indoor facility, so 20,000 square feet of basketball court, volleyball court, playing area. So it'll be a fun addition to what we have at the field house already, and just kind of complete that facility.
Okay. What other projects are underway at the rec center?
Rec center, that's going to complete that one. As far as with Basin as a whole, we're going to do some parking lot expansions up at Trailside Park. We've added a bike park. We've added a skate park. We've added a disc golf course, added tennis courts, but we didn't expand the parking. So now we're hoping to add about 70 spots up there to keep people off the roads and allow people a little more opportunity to park safely than being with the traffic.
Nice. And I understand you have children's yoga now over at the Basin Rec?
We do. We have over 70 classes. So, I mean, as the interests come, we add some, we take some away if the interests start to fade. But yeah, we have yoga for all ages. Fun over 50 programs. We do all types of different things there and out in our parks and on our trails.
So anything ahead, any surprises up your sleeve that the community can look forward to?
We're looking for a fun summer. I mean, we don't really have a ton of brand new things. A lot of programming that we have is fairly new with our Ultimate Frisbee and Fun Over 50 program and those types of things. But we don't have the wow yet other than the fieldhouse, the fieldhouse completion. We hope to have a grand opening in June. So we're we will invite the community to come out and check out the new space and take advantage of all the activities that we'll have going on there.
Okay. Is there anything you'd like to add before we go to break?
Nope. I think we're covers it.
That covers the big stuff.
Yeah.